Welcome to Make Your Wealth Work, the podcast where wealth becomes your greatest ally in achieving your dreams.
Today, we have something a little different for you. Take a listen to this previously recorded interview. It's just too good, and we didn't want you to miss it. Enjoy the episode and join us again next week.
I am excited. And a lot of times I got to remind y'all that I do infinite banking. Okay. And so a lot of y'all call me and I got to clean up stuff because you heard something on TikTok and it wasn't set up. You think you can use IUL, all kinds of nonsense. So I'm going to start to really go in on some of that so y'all can get this done straight. So with that being said, I have my personal mentor and coach, Joe Pantozzi, when we're business together with Alpha by Practical Wealth. He's the founder of Alpha Omega Wealth. And what's exciting is that he studied directly with Nelson Nash for what, Joe, 18 years before he passed away?
19, yep.
Yeah, 18, 19 years. And so there's a foundation. So we were on a call the other day and he said, no, so let me give you a hint. We're going to talk about infinite banking. We're going to talk about business ownership and how this can help expand your business, help you become more efficient and whatever else that I can get him to tell you about. But one of the things he said, he was like, what did you spend on? You said you spent on page one. It's really in my book, it's page three, but introduction. Tell him the story and then we can start there.
Yeah. So page three is the first page with text on it, right? It's the introduction. The fifth edition. And I love bragging about the fact that I met Nelson in 2001, right after the book came out. And I was a slow learner. I mean, the book sat maybe under a pile of books for a year, at least a year. And then somebody lit me up and I decided to pay serious attention to it. And I'd already been to Nelson's seminars. And for the better part of that 19 years, we flew Nelson out couple times a year, and he would deliver his 10-hour seminar. And at first, I wasn't sure that I was going to be able to get people in the room to sit through a 10-hour seminar. And Nelson says, well, don't worry about it. It's really not that bad because we're going to have them come on Thursday night, and we'll have soft drinks and light snacks and sandwiches and so forth. And we'll just get acquainted for a couple hours. And then when they come back on Friday, it's only 8 hours. So we break it up. So I had Mr. Nash standing in the front of the room for 10 hours. And you know, if you had the privilege of meeting him, he was a sweet man. He was a genius. Some of us called him dad, and he called some of us son. It was a beautiful thing. But the thing was, sitting at his feet and having him expound on the things that the industry that we were already in should have taught us 20 years before he ever came on the scene. So this is not my first book. This is probably my third copy of Nelson's book. And this is my inside cover with my notes.
Wow. Now,
if you know why it's my third book, because I lost the first two. One of them I set on top of the roof of my car and then proceeded to pull out and drive away. And that book never came back. And the second one I lost somehow, some other way. This is my third one. And now I've gone and taken a new book, a new copy of the same book. And I'm starting to make notes all over again, because it's like any other technical manual, right? So if you're an engineer and you have an engineering Bible, if you're a salesman, have a sales Bible. If you're a theologian or a person of faith, you have your Bible, right? You don't read that thing once
and put it on the
right. Right? You refer to it all the time. And every time I open this thing up, I go back to the first words. And he says, the infinite banking concept is a text for a 10-hour course of instruction. This is not a little how-to manual that you pick up and learn 10 easy steps and then you just practice them and away we go and on with your life. No, actually, it's a belief system. It's a lifestyle. It's a philosophy. It's a course of history. It's a course of economics. It's a course on how to create intergenerational wealth. Took me a while to learn how to say that. Mm-hmm. It's a course on how to take your business and turn it into a wealth generator for good beyond your own life.
Right.
And remember, Nelson was a forester, so he tended to think in terms of decades, 70, 80, 100 years. He says, most of us won't even be here when that forest comes to fruition. Right. So we're planting seeds today for oak trees that'll be here 100 years from now. Right. We want to plant businesses that hopefully some of our kids will want to pick up if that business is providing value, true value to people.
Right.
I always tell you guys, go out and love and serve people. That's why we're here. Yeah, I want to make a lot of money, but I want to make a lot of money so we can do good with it. Let's go find something worth doing that's good. Right? So this is how Nelson infected me. Right? He opened up he took the blinders off. And he said, let's look at the whole wide world and find out how all these things work together. Joe, what do you know about banking? Well, Nelson, I don't know anything about banking because I'm in the insurance business. I'm in the investment business. I help people with their money. I'm a money manager. No, you're not a money manager. You need to teach your clients how to manage money. People are smart. They can manage their own money. You need to coach people. You need to teach people, mentor people, encourage people. And that's why I'm here. I want to encourage people. And I'll just throw this stat out. I looked this up this morning. There are 33 million small businesses in the U.S. 33 million small businesses. That's described as a business with less than 500 employees. Okay. And it's usually managed by less than five owners. That's the IRS definition of a closely held business. So that means that almost half of our working force works for small businesses. So you out there who own small businesses, you're more important than you even realize. You're the lifeblood of our country. You're the financial engine of our country. You're going to be the financial savior of our country. And that's why it's so important that we do everything we can do to help you survive.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. One of my key beliefs is that I work for the business owner. Of course, I care about your employees. Of course, I want them to have good pay. Of course, I want them to have good working conditions. Of course, I want them to have benefits. But they won't have any of those things if the business doesn't make it. And the business is not going to make it if the business owner wakes up one day and says, wait a minute, I paid 15 employees last year. We grossed $3 million and I'm late on my car payment. There's something wrong with that equation. And so when you've heard me preaching this for all the years we've been together, I want you to put your name at the top of your creditor list. There is no one more important than you. And I equate myself, we're interchangeable, Pantozzi and the Pantozzi family bank are one and the same because it's a concept, right? So Nelson taught us it's not an outside entity. It's not a construct of the IRS. It's not an investment scheme. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's not an entity that the state allows you to set up. It's a concept. It's how you think. And if you start to believe that you can actually control your finances for your future and take care of the things that you want to take care of, your family, your spouse, your kids, your grandkids, your posterity, your causes, you're going to see that business as your baby. And we've got to make sure that baby survives. Now, right now, only about 1 out of 10 businesses make it to the third generation if they're trying to pass the business down to their kids. Only 1 out of 10.
Wow.
And there are reasons for that, which we can go maybe into another episode. But what Nelson taught us, first page of introduction, he says, your need for finance during your lifetime is much greater than your need for protection. Now, your need for protection is important, right? Yeah. I talk to my clients about being protected against lawsuits. I want your assets to be protected against market fluctuation.
Right.
I want you to be protected against scammers and fraud and medical disaster and bankruptcy and all these things. All the ways that we could possibly remind you how to protect yourself within reason is important. And then number two, we want to teach you how to become world-class savers, because savings has to precede everything else in the financial world, right? Banks understand this. Because Nelson reminded us a bank cannot make a loan unless it has a deposit.
Right.
They teach these courses in college. They teach MBAs. Banks have to have deposits in order to make loans. They're not lending their own money, right? Now, if you want to continue on the path you're on, using a bank and having a bank as your senior partner, because usually if you have a bank involved in your business, that bank wants a bigger and bigger piece of your business.
A commercial bank, like
they're going to get their claws in you, and every opportunity they see for your growth, they want to lend you money. And I guarantee you one thing: they will always make a profit. There's no guarantee we'll make a profit, but the bank wants to guarantee themselves that they make a profit. You know what? Mm-hmm. You start to think like bankers.
See, and I think that like when they hear the concept, so many people think like that are finding this online, because when I first got it, nobody was talking about this. And now everybody and their brother are doing it, and most of them are doing it wrong, but they think it's about the life insurance. Right. What's the cash internal rate of return? What's this? Which company? What's the dividend rate? I don't know, actually. It doesn't matter. Okay. It doesn't really matter, because I always tell people it's a saving strategy. So I had this woman call me the other day. She's like, well, I've heard about you and, you know, I'm in whole life and I want to create wealth. And, you know, they'll throw all this stuff. I said, listen, how much you make? How much of that do you save? I said, well, it's a saving strategy, because I said, listen, you're building a bank, which the concept, a bank can't make a loan. I think it was Adam Smith who said it originally, right? A bank can't make a loan until it has a deposit. So you've got to capitalize your system. And so if you can't save, I can't help you. So the first thing I got to figure out how to do is help you find the money so you can save money so you can beat a bank. And so banking, like the way I teach, is step two. Like first, we got to give you some principles, help you save money. And then I'm making them read the book, because I had a young guy, he'll probably listen to this all, but he read the book a couple of years ago. He heard me speak at the Laundromat Conference. But he was like, well, how about this and how about that? I said, listen, dude, you got to reread the book, because you're not getting it. And then I sent him, I have a little mini course that we give our clients of about some of our interviews, some of our best stuff. And then I was like, just listen to this and reread the book. And then he came back and says, oh, I get it. And because it's becoming your own banker. Becoming, right? It's not do what Curtis says do. It's not do what Joe says do. You know, Nelson used to say it takes two to tango. So we're like, oh, Nelson, because people say, Nelson, you changed my life. Da, da. I go, takes two to tango. So
another thing he said is infinite banking is about like-minded people contracting with one another on a free will basis. Now, when most people think about their commercial banking relationship, their SBA, their lender, their credit union, their finance company, leasing company, whatever. Come on, don't tell me that you think the person at the other end of that phone is a like-minded person. No, they're the 600-pound gorilla with all the money. Why do they have all the money? Because they figured out a way to aggregate everybody else's savings, ordinary savings. And so what we're doing is we're saying, well, let me look around and see if there's another person or another entity that would be like-minded with whom I can contract and help me expand my financial world. Because right now, most people are expanding the financial world of the banks. And so we discovered, well, gee, there are these life insurance companies out there that are mutual companies. They exist for the benefit of the policy owner, policy holder, insured person. And they've had to put our interests first. In fact, all their profits go back to policy holders. That's why we believe in mutual companies and we believe in dividend paying whole life insurance, because those companies actually partner with us. And every time I pay interest on a loan, because I'm using my values as collateral, I'm not touching my values. My values continue to grow. I'm taking a loan from that life insurance company at the most favorable rate that you could possibly get, which this year is 4% on a new policy. Mm-hmm. 4% remains intact for the next 100 years, as long as you're alive. With an option, this is really cool because I helped develop the contract, with an option to go to a variable rate if you see that the dividends are going to be higher on the variable rate side, if you see that they're not higher, you go back to the 4%. The 4% is always available. And so now you take the next step and say, well, how can I get into a relationship with that insurance company and have them look at me as a platinum class partner?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can do that by putting in large sums of premium in the policies I own and control and can use as my collateral, and will one day create a windfall to my family, to my kids, to my grandkids, to my trust, to my heirs, to my charities, to do the things that I'm not done doing when I leave this earth. So to me, it's a win-win. I get to control the values. I get to direct the benefits. I get access during my lifetime. I get to direct the benefits after I'm gone. Talk about control from the grave. That's what estate planning is all about. And all because I want to set my business up in such a way that it's survivable. Maybe you want to set it up for sale, but you know what? Nobody wants to buy a failing business. Nobody wants to buy a business. They look at the financials and say, wait a minute, why would I buy this business? You took 4% to your bottom line last year. Why would I do that? I'm better off just going out and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put 4% to the bottom line, and I got these 15 mouths to feed, these employees. They're beautiful people, love them, but wait a minute. This is the tail wagging the dog. So Nelson's teaching us to think like an entrepreneur, think like a bank, and think like a business owner, and one who has an obligation to himself to make sure that we survive.
Right.
Survive and thrive.
I think entrepreneurial thinking is major, and I think that you have to, one of the things, like I'll see people that'll try to teach it, like, so let's go back. For those of y'all don't, if you're coming in, what are they talking about? This is how I describe it. And if you want to add on to this or change it, what is infinite banking is a concept, right? So, but it's creating a pool of capital. That's all banking is, that you control, that can move at cost to meet some needs you have. So if your business and you're generating $500,000 a year, what Nelson says in the book, everybody needs two businesses, the ones that gives them a paycheck and the banking business. Because 35% of every dollar leaves your house in the form of financing. So he says you solve for your need for financing. So if you ran 10% or 20% of your revenue through a properly structured dividend paying whole life, you would have a lot of, and I see, this is why I'm putting it out there, because I know I think smaller than you. So I'm trying to get around you so I can, you know, help people, you know, see the vision of that. They've got to put away more money. And because people start with not so much business owners, people come to me and say, well, how little can I start with? I was like, that's the wrong question. Go back and read the book again, because I'm not even answering that.
And the reason that they have that in their mind is because they have a ball and chain, which is the banking relationship that they have. So when somebody gets in the business, they even start business with that same question you just asked. What's the minimum I can come up with and still start a business? So if I need $1 million and I can come up with 100,000, that means I can get 90% financing, go to a bank. I'm using crazy numbers, but this is what happens over a lifetime. People wind up being indebted and enslaved to the banking relationship, right? Nelson talks about that in the whole chapter one of the case for IBC. It talks about how banks wind up taking liens, UCC liens on your equipment, and their whole objective is to put their claws in you so deep that you have to serve them first.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're so addicted to the thinking, well, I could only save X because I have the bank I have to service. He said 35% goes out in financing, and specifically 35% of take-home goes to interest payments. So imagine if you could redirect, turn around, recapture just 10% of that interest expense. And now instead of the 3.6% that Americans saved last year, maybe, right? Which most Americans didn't. That's an average. It's a terrible average. Mm-hmm. What if you could add 10% on top of that? Well, how can I do that? Well, stop putting everybody else at the top of your food chain. If you require that the cost of doing business is that I get the first 15% of gross, then I have to pattern my business plan around that. Well, I've got this 600-pound gorilla. I've got to pay first. And you know who that is? It's me. The rest of my business plan has to follow. If I have to increase expenses, increase gross revenue, if I have to decrease expenses, have to cut a trip in the short run, Nelson is managing his lifestyle, which he learned early on. It's whatever I have to do to take that money off the top. Because what happens now? Well, I get my gross revenue. I pay all the vendors and the financiers, the creditors, and the tuition and the power bill, blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the month, if I have anything left, then it goes to savings. And savings is kind of a throwaway. Well, if, you know what? If savings doesn't get paid this month, then it doesn't get paid. Right. And besides, let's be honest with it. Next month, 2 months later, 3 months later, what are you doing? You're dipping into savings anyway. You're not treating it like savings. I mean, Americans, I mean, they make such a big deal out of 401ks. And over 40% of Americans have loans against the 401ks. Is it accomplishing the purpose? I don't think so. So you're locking up money, and then you're paying a penalty if you don't pay your loan back. And you put you're back in the worst position they were when you started.
Right.
So now, right. If I'm putting myself at the bottom of the creditor list, and I say, well, you know, at least everybody else gets paid. No. Tell you what, put yourself at the top of the food chain. Put your power bill at the bottom. Well, I can't do that. I can't have my power turned off. You can't have your family turned off either. You can't have your future turned off. I'm not going to have my retirement suffer. That's a terrible word because I don't believe in it. Retirement, passive income. But why does my name have to be at the bottom of the list? You pick any one of your creditors and put them at the bottom of the list and say, you know what? If I make a profit this month, if I make it to the bottom, you'll get paid. How are they going to feel about it?
Listen, that, you know, richest man in Babylon, part of all you earn is yours to keep, right? And so yes. I tell people, yes. You got to stamp that on your brain.
We can put intellectual ideas into our brain and we can say, I really got to get around to that. Really got to get around to that. No, you have to believe it and believe that you're worth it. And I'm not talking about somebody who's a W-2 employee. I'm talking about everyone.
What are some of the, once they've got that, because I'm looking at the book and it says the whole idea is to recapture interest that is one to paying the banks and finance companies for the major items they need during a lifetime, such as automobiles, major appliances, education, homes, investment opportunities, business equipment, etc. But he says this book is not about investments of any kind. It's page 3. It's about how one finances the things in life, which can certainly include investments, but it's not about rates of return, IUL people, right? It's as time goes by, rates are up and rates are down, but the process of banking goes on no matter what is happening. It is a well-known fact that actually banks make more money during low interest rates environments rather than high. So if I'm a business owner hearing this, what, and maybe give you some examples of, because you had some really successful people that caught this vision. And how does this help them become more efficient? Does it help them make more money? Does it, because I people are like, why would I do this? Why would I put in a high yield savings? These are the stuff I, these are the questions I get.
Let me go back to the 10%, right?
Yeah.
Back to the 10%. Unfortunately, 90% of the people that hear this will go away and they'll say, that's good for other people. Because I'm in such debt. I'm under such a pile of obligations. That wouldn't work for me. All right. Well, if that's the way you think, then that's absolutely true. But right. If you think you can dig and claw your way out, well, then you will find a way to do it. My wife and I met in 1988. And sorry to say, because of past mistakes and poor relationships and whatever, life happens.
One of the things is that it's not a get-rich-quick plan. It's like, listen, you have to build access to capital. Number one problem I see with business owners, they don't save enough or they leave it all in their business, which I also view as risky. And they, because it's when, like what I do is I'll get 15% off the top and then I'll move that into policies, plural. And then what happens is now there, I can redeploy them back into whatever I need the money for, but I'm going to kind of keep my money circulating. So what Kiyosaki says, once it hits your asset column, you don't want to ever let it leave. Welcome back, Joe. So you're making such a great point.
So we were talking about the 10% and the problem is, we love everybody. We care about everybody. I want everybody to be successful. But the thing is, only 10% are going to get it. The other 90% are not going to want to do the work to change their thinking, because nothing else happens until you change your thinking. So there are so many outside forces telling us that's about the dumbest thing in the world to focus on savings. You need to be putting your money someplace where you're going to make a rate of return. Right? It's always about that. You need to trust somebody else because they know what they're doing. Trust the professionals.
Right. Right.
But I also have clients that have been financially successful by using only a savings account over the last 30, 40, 50 years. And they've amassed 7 figures because they don't want to listen to anybody else. And they say, you know what? I may not make a very big interest rate, but I'm going to put 15% of my gross income in the savings account, and no one's going to mess with it. You know what? You cannot argue with success.
Exactly. Right?
So in order to do this, you have to eliminate all the noise and tell yourself everything is founded on savings, right? Banks are building their empires, their trillion-dollar portfolios based on the small saver. And if you start to understand, if I'm financing 90% of my business through banks, why wouldn't I take over some of that? Why wouldn't I get into a strategy where I eventually take over that financing and finance it myself using my own savings? It's a huge paradigm shift. And it's not just about taking 10% of my money and changing my strategy with 10%. No, it's changing my strategy for 100% of how I manage my financial life.
Elaborate on that. What do you mean when you say that? Because you have a definite way that you do that. And sure. I want people to hear what truly banking is about.
So I've said this very often. Other people would look at my life insurance portfolio and call it obscene. And I really like that. So if you looked at my life insurance premiums, I put obscenely large amounts of money into my life insurance, and I do that before I do anything else. And because of that, we've been able to capitalize multiple agencies that we've set up across the country. We've been able to invest and expand in our business, invest in marketing, invest in education, invest in conferences, invest in international real estate, in beachfront properties, in closely held companies outside of my own that are very large, very profitable, multi-million dollar closely held companies. We've been able to do things that we never would have been able to do had we only leaned on credit. Mm-hmm. There are some things that required me to put down 50, 60, 100% cash, and they turned into either capital gains opportunities or cash flowing opportunities or both. And so I'm talking about doing things that seem ridiculous. So if you have a hard time thinking about saving 10%, think about saving 40%.
Yeah.
Think about saving 50%. Now, if you need to back that down to 25, it might seem reasonable. You might say, well, gee, 25 doesn't seem that hard. Because when you think about all the money that's being wasted, right, around the fringes, we're spending an awful lot to provide our lifestyle.
Right.
And if you look backwards and say, gee, I made $5 million in the last 5 years. I made $5 million in the last 10 years. I made $5 million in the last 20 years. I don't care what the number is. Whatever you made since the first day you ever worked, it's a big number. How much did you have in savings yesterday? So how much did you save versus how much did you earn? That all that means is you gave the rest of it away to somebody else.
Right.
And that somebody else, I guess, blew up your ego and made you feel good because they sold you the Rolex or whatever it is that, that made you feel good. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with good life, with a great lifestyle. But at the expense of financial stability tomorrow and at the expense of having to pay the freight, having to pay that 35% interest to others. Now I control a financial world with a healthy, obscenely large capital base.
Right.
So if somebody comes to me and says, I've got an investment that I'd like you to consider, and it's going to take $50,000 for you to write a check. Yeah, I can do that, lots and lots. But now I'm in the driver's seat.
Right.
I get to pick and choose. I don't need to run around saying, hey, where can I invest $400 a month and make 1,000,000,000%? No, you get to pick your spots because you're in control. Freedom is sometimes related to money. I was talking about the paradox of prosperity. The more money we have, the more choices we have.
Right.
The more choices, the more confusion, the more chaos, and the more fear. And the more fear, the less freedom. So you got to be careful what you go after when you're looking to accumulate money. And that's another reason why people don't save, because they're afraid of what that money might do to them. Well, what's the debt doing to you now?
Exactly.
Why not try a different way?
Because the number one problem I see as I work with families and business, they just don't have enough capital. They think they should be investing. They should have money in the market. And one of the things that I try to tell people, I was on this podcast, I was being interviewed on yesterday. I said, I want to talk about why you think typical financial planning doesn't work for business owners. And I said, well, because basically it teaches them to send money away from their most profitable investment, which is their business, out of their control to some fund manager they ain't never met, hoping the market goes up. Whereas if you have capital and you can invest in coaching or hiring staff or getting a new building or in a marketing program or whatever, that will generally generate more money to S&P. And you control it. And because we talk about, when I talk to clients, here's what I tell people, investing is about becoming something, not about buying something. So it's be, become, then do, then have. And then I say, and then here's the three rules of investing I've learned to try to follow and share is invest in knowing. Okay. Invest in what you can control or something that you can influence the outcome of. Does it cash flow? And don't chase returns. That's our three rules. You can chase returns and you can use equities, but you know, if I've got the choice, I want to control. I was looking at something I got to pay out, something I financed, and it's like, I add up the payments and it was like, wait, this is like $400 and something. I'm going to take a policy loan, pay that off, and redirect that money back to the Bank of Curtis. And so I always viewed it, I say, look, there's the accumulation theory, buy and hold, dollar cost average, get out of debt. But there's the velocity method, and infinite banking is about velocity. It's about money moving through assets, whether it's to recapture money you're giving away or to buy things that make you more money. And so it should be like at the forefront of your mind at all times. Who's controlling the bank? Am I controlling my money?
So if you go back to the very first sentence of the introduction, he says, this book is a text based on a 10-hour course.
Yeah. Right?
And it's not an idea. It's not a scheme. It's not a strategy. It's not a thing you can flip a switch, right? It's a matter of studying. Just like anything else that's worthwhile, you want to become a doctor, it's 12 years worth of postgraduate education.
Right.
You want to become a world-class athlete, you're going to be doing those push-ups and those pull-ups and then running marathons until you're throwing up, because you've committed your life to accomplishing that purpose, right? Same thing with money. We've delegated the responsibility for our money to everyone else, and all those other individuals and entities, they all have their money out and they're looking to make money on our money.
Right.
Because they haven't figured out how to become their own banker. So they say, well, if I can become everybody else's banker, I won't have to worry about it. So they're drawing money to themselves, right? That's why, remember he said, if all the money in the world was distributed equally among all the people in the world,
right,
in a year's time, 97% would be under control of 3%, 3% of the people. And that's because those 3% have figured out how to get money to draw toward them instead of away from them. And right. So if you're going to do that, you have to look in the mirror and say, I'm going to take responsibility for the money that's under my control, and I'm going to have that capital form the foundation for everything I do, everything. No exceptions. We're going on a vacation in July. We're going on another one in September, right? Those vacations will be financed through my family bank.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll borrow against an asset and we'll pay back. And at the end of the day, when I come back from those vacations, I'll have the money back in my control. Right? Remember Nelson says, it's about financing the things of life, and we finance everything we buy, not just the things that we buy on credit. And one of the biggest things that people argue against and don't understand, they fight against this, is that you pay interest to somebody else when you borrow, but you also lose interest when you pay cash.
And the I get so much pushback on that. Like, they don't, you know, they get that you're, when you use other people's money, you got to pay interest, but they don't get, it's hard. I'm getting better at getting at a point that you finance it. When you pay cash, you finance it because you got to understand the concept of opportunity cost, which they don't teach in personal finance, which they don't teach in that.
Well, the thing is, if you lose the earnings that you could have earned by when you pay cash, people can't get into a head that, wait a minute, if the money's under my control, I'm supposed to be gaining an earnings rate or an interest rate of some kind. And that's what people don't get, because they already believe, they're pessimists, they're scarcity thinkers. They already believe, when the money's in my control, I spend it, I lose it, I never invest it. So therefore, the idea of opportunity cost doesn't click with them, because every time they have money in their hands, they spend it out.
Right.
So that's a principle of economics that doesn't click with people. They don't get it. Every time I have money in my control, I wind up losing it. My money goes into savings only to as a waiting room to go into my checking account so I can write a check to somebody else. See, that's an addiction.
Right. Yes. Guys, this is like on the start of a series, right? Of just because it's an exercise in, it's a thought process. Like, so a lot of times people hear this stuff and I say, look, this is Nelson studied Austrian economics for 50 years. I mean, it's a mixture. So when these new people come along and say, well, look, this is the new way, whole life is the old way, you have no idea that the economics that goes behind what we're talking about. I'll tell y'all, if y'all want to get a idea of a Cliff Notes version of Austrian economics, I want you to go get the economics in one lesson. And then you'll start to understand a lot of these fallacies that don't work and why what we're teaching you allows you to be in control of your personal economy, because you can't control business owners, family. Because even if you're a family, you're in business. You should see yourself as, you know, you got to be an entrepreneurial thinker, and you can't control the economy, but you can control at large, but you can control your personal economy, your production and consumption as a family unit. And you've got scarce resources, so you got to be good at managing it. That's all economics is. Like, they want to make it into some, you know, you get a Nobel Prize for economics. They couldn't manage their budget, their household budget, a lot of these economic people. And so that's economics. It's from the root. I always pronounce it wrong, Joe. It's economos, which means household manager. That's what economics is based on. It's more philosophy than science, I think. Human action. And I don't think that the 12 people in a room can control an economy. I think that's hubris. And
one of the definitions talks about economics being the branch of knowledge concerned with the production, consumption, and transfer of wealth. But other definitions say production, consumption, and transfer of scarce resources.
Mm.
Right. So you can think of resources being scarce because they're limited. It doesn't matter how much money you make at the end of that number. Is a limit. So you have to look at that and say, what can I do with the amount that I've produced? Well, I can't do that much because I didn't produce that much. Well, then you better start looking at changing your career. adding a second job, a side hustle, right? The gig economy, right? The do whatever it takes philosophy has to be part of your life. If I'm not working now based on what I'm doing, what can I do differently? And that's where I think we can help.
So, yeah. So think about that. What can you do differently? How can you maintain control? How can you make sure that whatever you do, it works in good times and bad? Like, so financial planning is not really investment planning. It's really, and we're not talking about financial planning, but it's really, I view it as preparation for stuff going sideways, right? So if you start with provisioning and preparation, because most of the stuff is going to go wrong, and you start with, you can't have a plan that only works when the sun is shining, okay? Because it's going to rain, right? And so you've got to prepare for rain. You got to prepare if you're sailing a ship from England to Philadelphia for rough seas. It's not going to be left port with the sun shining, but you're going to go through stuff, and you got to prepare for that for a 3-month journey if you're sailing. So, Joe, what I want to do is we'll continue this going. And so, Joe, give them the, what's your site? Alpha Omega.
Alpha Omega Wealth.com.
.com. Okay. And then we're practicalwealth.com. So we're business partners, I would say. So if you call me, you'll get him. If you heard me on his show, you'll get me. So if you call him. So guys, I want you to go out there. So I want to start this conversation and just really help you understand banking. I want y'all to go out. If you don't have Become Your Own Banker, go to Amazon, go to the Infinite Banking. What's it called? What's the site called?
Nelson Nash Institute.
Nelson Nash Institute. And I would get that. I would get a case for IBC, and I would get Building Your Warehouse to Wealth. If you want, like the people say, oh, I'm going to do some research. If you're not reading that, that's the source. Okay. Everything else is extra stuff. People making stuff, not making stuff. It's a few other books. I like Garrett's book and what the Rockefellers do, but I'm saying you got to go, but he all learned all this stuff from Nelson. Right. So you got to go to the source. Don't go to TikTok. I'm going to do some research. Can't get your financial planning in 40 seconds.
Yeah, research is usually an excuse to put off making a decision. Sorry.
Right.
You want to be technical. If you want to be technical, or you want your accountant to bless this, and most of the CPAs I know believe in guarantees, and they agree with our backbone of our economy being a properly designed whole life policy. But if you want to look at the technical dissertation and not just some fluff, you can read life insurance as an asset class. And if you ask Curtis for it or ask me for it, we'll send you the ebook. And that'll give you the data and the math and show you how technically it actually works.
Yeah, guys, it's your money. It's not our money. We're just the guides. So you got to do a little bit of homework, but we will guide you down the right path, but you got to do a little work, because you shouldn't take people's word for stuff when it comes to money. You got to read a book.
Good, sir.
Listen to the show, but I want you to read a book after you listen to the show, and then reach out to us. So guys, I'm going to end this call for today. I want you to see the thought process, the philosophy. So we talked about infinite banking is using properly structured dividend paying whole life in a mutual company, but that's the product. That's the way I teach it, Joe. And I want to end with this is there's principles, there's strategy, there's tactics. So strategy is how to run your personal economy like Bank of America, right? And then the tactic to employ that, because you don't need life insurance to do it, but it works best with that, is a life insurance product. So that's the tactic. That's a product implements the strategy. And then the principle, the way I teach it, that precedes the strategy, is saving 20%, 30% or more of your gross income into a properly structured policy. So I think you have to start with cash flow and figure out, if you're not doing that, why you can't. Because what we really help people do is what I call deconstruct their personal economy. Because right now it's constructed to serve everybody but you, and you have to take it apart and reconstruct it so that it serves you. And so that's the work, and that's the work that we help people do. Joe, any words of wisdom to take us home?
We're even talking about allocating a certain percentage of your income to a tactic or to a strategy actually doesn't necessarily serve the larger issue, is changing your entire mindset on your entire financial universe. And thinking about this, if I owned a bank, how much of my money would I be sending to my own bank versus how much of my money would I continue sending to somebody else's bank? So if you say, well, I'm going to try this, wrong thinking, I'm going to try this, I'm going to put 10% of my money into my own family banking system, but I'm going to keep on taking the poison that the financial lenders and masters are giving me, and I'll continue to send them 90%. Right? Start thinking differently about your money, because it's all yours. It's all under your control. And you're sending money out to those financial masters voluntarily. You just may want to change that paradigm.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a learning process. You got to get around people, like-minded people that think like this. And so we're building communities so that we're not strange. We actually have the right message, which is the whole financial world is set up to make money off of you not completely understanding the game of money. So we want you to know the game. Joe, thank you so much. I always excited to have you on the call and build this library of wisdom that I'm building when I have you on here. So I appreciate you guys. Go out there and make it a fantastic day.
This is the podcastfactory.com.